Hello, hello, hello out there in podcast land. You are listening to Johnny Has the Keys, and you're here with your host, me, Tim, and my good friend, David Horton. Hey, David.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, how are you doing out there in inner space where I can't see you?
Well, yes. Yes, I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you. You're glad to be back and doing another podcast with you.
Yeah, we've got a good one going this week. But before that, I wanted to give a little shout out to something that I enjoyed last night. This episode, of course, will be airing a little later, so this may be dated. But I watched the season premiere of season 10 of The Walking Dead last night. And I thought it was a really, really cool episode. It was directed by your favorite, Mr. Nicotero.
I'm certain it was excellent then.
He usually does the openers and the closers. But
Yeah, because that's the ones that get the most press, so he wants that.
We touched base on this with our Patreon podcast, the Lithium Chamber, about how sometimes female writers and or showrunners give a feel to a show that's a little more, I don't know, deep or rich. We talked about it with Charlie X and DC Fontana, and this, and God, I can't remember her name, but there is an Asian woman that is now the showrunner on Walking Dead, and she's bringing a real richness to the show, especially considering that the cast is 1,000 now. I mean, there's just so many people on it because it's so successful. But it is, if I remember right, it's been a while since I read the comics. It is a story from the comics where it starts with a Russian satellite in space that is losing orbit and falling to Earth. And on the episode, you know, there are different tribes within the Walking Dead world now. Of course, they scattered the characters we know amongst those tribes to keep everybody's interest up. And basically, it's like something happening with each of those tribes, and at some critical moment, each one is interrupted by that satellite, that flaming satellite falling to Earth. And I was like, wow. Because every time it comes, you almost forget. And then it happens. And you're like, oh, this is great. This is great. You know, because it's the common bond with all of them, even though they're separated.
Okay.
So, I just thought it was a cool opener. And they had a great scene with Carol at the end. I'll say that.
Anyway, so it seems like Walking Dead is like the 100 now, right? With all these different primitive tribes scattered about and how they are each coping or dealing or whatever?
Well, I would say there are 4 tribes and a 5th primitive. The 4 tribes, of course, are the good guys. And then there's the primitive tribe, which are called the Whisperers, that are out there wearing dead skins and basically living like animals.
Wearing zombie skin.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's cool.
So any of you Walking Dead people out there, yes, I am still watching the show. So
I thought for sure you were going to talk about, like, In the Tall Grass or one of those other King.
I haven't seen it yet. Like, I want to watch it today.
Okay. Well, then next week you can talk about it.
Maybe.
Mine is another thing I watched, too. There is a series. It's a Netflix original series called Abstract. I thought it was going to be a one season and done thing because I watched it like 2 years ago, but they just came out with a new season and it's so good. It is a documentary. Each hour takes a different artist and explores what makes them creative or where do they get their inspiration or how do they do the thing they do. Like the original series had such great people on it, and then I thought, well, you couldn't do better than that, but but they did.
It's the second season?
Yes. Okay. It's called Abstract. One of the ones in the first season I really liked was Platon, who is a French photographer. He's the one that does all of the pictures of, he does like photo portraits. So, like, he does all the pictures of famous leaders and politicians and religious figures and all that, which is great. They had Ingalls, who is an architect. They had S. Devlin, who is a scenic designer. That's what really turned me on to it first. And but each hour explores their art and what makes their art unique and different. And it's, if you are a creative at all, it is really intriguing the way they actually redesign and retailer every episode to that artist. From the opening credits to everything is redesigned for that particular artist that week. So it's really cool. And I watched a couple of episodes of that. Each season has, I think, 6 or 8 episodes. So that's what I watched a couple of those on the plane this week. So it was great.
That's cool. Yeah, I've got some catching up to do. I've got a list of things I want to watch, and In the Tall Grass is one of them.
Oh, definitely. That's on my list too. So what are we? So this week, I'm excited. This week, because as I have said, I think I said it twice in our first season. This movie, this week, is to me the definitive science fiction movie of all time. It is, if people say, how do you turn a, what is a science fiction movie? It would be this movie, in my opinion. That's what I would recommend first. What do you think?
Well, I'm just curious why you think that. Why is it more science fiction than The Wrath of Khan?
Because Wrath of Khan is more of a space opera sort of thing, really. It's still Star Trek and it's still told well in a fantastic, created future, so to speak. But
Well,
this
what about
movie.
what's something that's not a space opera? Like, what about 2001? Why is
Well,
it more sci-fi
2001,
than 2001?
Day the Earth Stood Still. This is more sci-fi because, and this is my reasoning. Because A, it's based on the novel by Michael Crichton, which was really great too. But every single motivator and decision in this movie deals with science. The whole impetus at the beginning is, was created by science, and every single thematic plot point is science based. I mean, I don't want to get into all of them right now, but everything, it's not so much human nature based as it is science based. And there's constant correction for science. You know, the Stone character is constantly saying, no, don't jump ahead. We treat this methodically. We do this with science. We do this right. And so it's taking science and elevating it into a fictional realm, but allowing science to motivate everything that happens in it, if that makes sense. Whereas, like Wrath of Khan, there are human motivator factors, whether it's revenge, which is the ultimate, you know, thing, the Moby Dick story, all of that is really what's motivating the plot. In this, what's motivating, we don't really care about the emotions that go into it. We care about the science that propels it. Does that make sense? Am I being weird? But that's what I feel.
No, actually, no. What I thought you were going to say, I just got my head digressed a little bit because I noticed how we keep dropping Star Trek influences. But it's because we're recording that bonus material for Patreon, and it's like we're permeated with Star Trek now. It's just funny. But no, what I thought you were going to
True.
say is that it's set in a more realistic world, is what I thought you were going to say. Or that it's like,
No, I think.
it's not too far from the truth,
Oh,
whereas
yeah,
some things
definitely.
are
But I
way
think.
out there, you know,
But
alien,
no, I
you know,
think
is
to your
way out
point,
there.
you cannot say that 2001 is not a science fiction movie. You know, you can't say that, you know, Wrath of Khan is not a science fiction movie, or Day the Earth Stood Still, or any of those. But to me, I have always said, if you want real science fiction, then read this novel and or watch this movie. Don't watch the freaking miniseries remake that sucked, but watch this movie and or read this novel, because it also feels to me like old school science fiction too. The you know, some of the old school Harryhausen stuff, and some of the, I mean, some of the Heinlein
Harryhausen.
stuff.
This is a
Yeah,
Sinbad
Harryhausen.
movie.
He, yeah, he stop motion guy, sorry, wrong word, but Heinlein and all of them. So but I guess we're rambling on, but we haven't even said what movie we're talking about. But of course, you, dear podcast listeners, know, because you have clicked on the episode. So So obviously you know what we're talking about. We are talking about 1971 Robert Wise's incredible movie, The Andromeda Strain. And there'll probably be music underneath here. It'll be great. Which was a great movie and well done. A simple synopsis before we...
Yeah. The end.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
It's a great movie. The end. Cheerio.
Brief synopsis. The movie begins with a satellite or some form of space vehicle that has somehow landed in the middle of New Mexico, and they're investigating it. It turns out that it brought a biological contagion back to Earth. We don't know in what form or how. We just know that it killed the entire town. Animals, dogs, cats, people, everything. And a special group is assembled. This group has been planning for this unfortunate contingency for a few years, and they take the capsule along with two survivors to a secret underground lab called Wildfire, where their goal is to determine what the contagion is and how to stop it. And the rest of the movie proceeds from there with this group of scientists trying to race against the clock to stop this deadly contagion from taking over and destroying the world. And that doesn't sound like a very original story, because we've seen that since in several keys after that. But this one does it the best, in my opinion. So, I mean, this is one of my favorite movies. I definitely love this movie. What did you think about it, Tim?
I think it's a great movie. It's... Here he goes. It's a little long.
Oh my god!
Because I think that I don't have a problem with a science fiction movie that is cerebral and that makes you think. But I do think that when that's all you're doing and there's a little less action, that sometimes it does need to be tightened up a bit. But I do like the movie. I especially like the French actress that plays Dr. Leavitt. I thought she was fantastic.
Oh, Kate Reed. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think she's French. I think I read that somewhere.
She's really good. And, you know, interestingly, Leavitt in the novel is a guy. And the screenwriter, Nelson Gedding, made it a female in this. And it works so much better, I think. I mean, I like both.
Mm-hmm. And Weiss was reluctant to do that, because he was afraid that it was going to be something like Raquel Welch in Fantastic Voyage, and once he saw who he could put in that role, it made more sense. So.
Well, this is Robert Wise, who also went on to direct motion picture. He had done, like we've talked about before, he's done West Side Story. He did my favorite science fiction movie. I mean, of all time, A Day the Earth Stood Still. So,
So we're double dosing on Mr. Wise this season.
Yeah, and well worth it. I think he's brilliant in telling a story.
I think I referred to him as an American treasure last time we talked to him.
And that was sweet of you to say, I think. But,
Well, I mean, West Side Story is one of my favorite movies, and he also did The Haunting.
Yes.
But you know, he's known for this and The Sound of Music and you name it. I mean, he's done a slew of huge movies.
And he falls into that category of director, like we talked about with a few others in the past, of, you know, you would be hard pressed to define his directing style, because he changes it for each project to make it work for what the story he's telling. And that's really great. He does it really well.
Yeah, he wasn't, forced into a niche, like a lot of directors are, you know.
This movie is from Universal, which made me smile too, just seeing that Universal logo again, because I like a lot of movies that they used to do. They assembled a great cast for it, a great crew for it. Visual effects had two guys that were kind of pseudo-key-ish for us, Doug Trumbull and Albert Whitlock. And Whitlock was
Matt Paintings.
And he was one of the best. I mean, if you go to his IMDb page, it just scrolls and scrolls and scrolls. I mean, he has done hundreds of movies. But the one that, you know, that I immediately thought of as soon as I see Whitlock was The Thing, John Carpenter's.
The Thing, yeah, for sure.
And then Douglas Trumbull was Close Encounters, of course, but he did a lot of the effects in this and was noted for it because, you know, this was in 71. There was no CGI. So all of the effects and the microscopic effects and all that had to be created. I read that one of my little things was I read that the projection when Stone is showing the whole five levels of wildfire and explaining the whole thing for everybody, that was to create that hologram. It's really just a projection, and they're using cardboard sheets to cover the different areas and then just expose them as he mentions it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Do you remember the first time you saw this movie?
I don't. I think it was, for some reason, I seem to remember that it wasn't like my normal shock theater thing. This was like shown on ABC or something at night. And it did have some edits, like the nude lady torso was not in it. But I always remember the cut the guy's wrist and the blood comes out as crystals. That creeped me out the first time I saw this.
Yes, it is creepy. I read that it was rated G. Actually, I saw that it was rated G, and I found that funny that they showed that woman's tits.
Yeah, yeah, I thought that was weird. But
I mean,
but
she's
yes,
obviously a corpse, and it's dark lit, but you can see them; they're right there. And I'm like, this is rated G. How did that happen?
Uh huh.
That wouldn't even happen in a PG movie.
No, that got by. I think again. Yeah. But that was the first, I can't remember. I just remember it had a big impact on me even as a kid. I had not read the novel when I saw the movie, and it made me pick up the novel and read it. Mm-hmm. And liked it ever since. And really liked, I mean, so much about this movie I really love. I just love the feel of it. It feels like an early 70s movie in style. Yeah. In style and character and everything. What about you?
The first time I saw this movie, you showed it to me at your mother's house.
Mm, okay.
And I think it was on a weekday because I don't think your mom was there. Because, I mean, usually she was, when I was over there, it was on Sundays. And she was there. But this day she wasn't there. And we watched it on that little TV in front of the couch, in front of the glass sliding door. I think there was a sliding door there. And it was that TV that's on the little cart with the wheels. Remember those?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't it like a rolling cart for a television? And I can't remember if it was on regular television or if we watched it on videotape. But you wanted me to see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course.
So
you have to see it.
That's when I first saw it.
It's incredible.
So there you go. I saw it at your mother's house in the 80s sometime.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And did it make an impact? Did it motivate you? Did it, you know?
The thing that captivates me most about this movie that probably it's a storytelling element that a lot of things employ to create interest, and that's the mystery of the man and the baby. You know, why is everybody dead but this man and this baby? And yeah, that's what I remember the most about it, is that mystery element, which is basically the reason of the movie. I mean, you know, they figure it out at the end. So,
yeah. I mean, as far as influences on us and, you know, the keys that impacted us, that was definitely one of mine, is the whole mystery of, you know, even I think Hall even says it, what keeps an elderly man and a young baby alive in the same conditions.
And there's one other thing. But
yeah.
I was just going to say, another thing that captivated me was the whole everyone's dead thing. Because I'm a big fan of post-apocalyptic stuff. So all of a sudden an entire town is dead. I mean, that was captivating to me as well.
Yeah, and then they end it with, you know, the big chase, the big, you know, nuclear countdown chase. That always got me. And then later on, I began to appreciate the style that Weiss told it in. I began to appreciate, you know, the multi-cuts, split screens, I thought are just brilliantly done. the fact that he uses those dual diopter lenses, so like something in the foreground is really in focus, but something in the background is really in focus too. And that wasn't used a lot. And just the way they then started flipping the story made me feel very literary. The fact that, you know, we would be into something and then suddenly we cut to the congressional hearing, which, you know, obviously took place after, but you're not sure why they're having it or what's up or whatever, you know, all of that. And like the sequence with when they're not getting the transmission. And then it cuts to the congressman. He's talking about, are you telling me this $9 million thing was delayed by a slip of paper? And obviously it's part of the investigation after. And just the way he told that story, I thought was really compelling. But for you, I guess it needed more fights and faster and everything else because you're so bored with it.
Well, no. I mean, maybe a little more creepiness with the town. I don't know. I wasn't bored. I just... I'm trying to be... I enjoy the movie. It's a good movie. It ranks in its place in sci-fi history. I'm a fan of... Well, let's go there. I'm a fan of Michael Crichton. I've probably read more Michael Crichton books than you have.
I'm sure.
But I also know that he's got some clunkers out there, so he's not always great. Andromeda Strain is great. Jurassic Park is great. At least the book is, I like better than the movie. But
yes.
He also wrote, you know, Timeline and Rising Sun, and they're not so great. Sphere and Congo are somewhere in the middle.
Now, Sphere is a key for this.
Maybe I'm a little disgusted because Andromeda Strain is him at his peak. It's great, and it's a shame because, you know, he went on to do other things that, you know, weren't always that great. So, I don't know. I've just got mixed feelings about Mr. Crichton. I think that may be where my hesitance is coming from.
So. Well, that could be. I mean, and also it is, like, to your point, it is a movie that loves science and technology, so it lingers on it. I mean, we show, you know, multiple minutes of him manipulating arms and putting cages into boxes and moving stuff around, whereas that could have been much faster edited or quick cut.
It could. But, and like some of the better parts are, you know, we always talk about science fiction is stories about why, you know, telling us why we're human or whatever. The more interesting parts are, to me, is when it gets fast paced at the end and Dutton is, you know, exposed and he's like, you know, don't turn off the oxygen. And he's like, you know, you can tell he's getting pissed off and there's conflict. And that's when it starts getting interesting. What's her face? Dr. Leavitt has the epilepsy seizure. I mean, that stuff was interesting to me. But that's when everything was speeding up. When he's climbing in the missile silo and the lasers are shooting at him. I was on the edge of my seat then.
Yeah.
But it took a while to get to that. So.
Yeah, I think maybe a little bit of... I mean, if you would change anything about this movie, which I really wouldn't, but maybe adding a little bit more of those human mystery elements in that second part, you know, in the second act kind of thing. Maybe more of like the jet flyby where the jet died. Maybe more of a
mystery. That was great.
A little bit more of a mystery with Leavitt in the fact that why didn't she see the no growth warning? Or maybe something else in there would have been interesting. I could agree with that.
And I like the dynamic between them. Like, she is a little resentful that they brought...
Hall.
Is it Stone? Stone's the MD, right?
Stone's the... No, Hall is the MD. Stone is the...
Hall, excuse me. I meant to say Hall. She's resentful that they bring him on because he's not a real scientist like they are or whatever.
Well, he wasn't the one that was part of the team. Kirk was originally, but he couldn't do the trip. Right. So he's the substitute, and he's the new guy. But again, that's to me, that's good storytelling too, because by having, you know, Hall as the new kid and then Stone as the expert who created it all, we could get all the backstory without it seeming spoon-fed or cliche. I think I could see what you're saying of maybe that second act needed a little bit more dynamic before it got into the suddenly, oh, now we've got a crystalline structure. Oh my God, it's growing. Oh, the seal has ruptured and he's stuck. Levitt has epilepsy. Oh no, now the bomb's going off. Yeah.
Well, and maybe that's just it. Maybe the first and third act are great and the second one's just a little lukewarm to me.
Yeah.
I could see that. It does have the Mad Hatter in it, though.
It does have David Wayne. Yeah, there's a key for you, the Mad Hatter. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the fact that, again, going back to Weiss's style, I've got in my notes. I like the fact that parts of this seem like a documentary almost. Mm-hmm. The way they'll cut to the ticker tape underneath, giving the day and the time. Or, you know, the location or whatever. And then it's filmed very straightforward, very, you know, cut back and forth.
I love the opening with the disclaimer and then those credits, which are just like documents superimposed in like a montage of color. I love that. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, and that little prologue is really cool because it makes you think this is a real thing.
Exactly.
It looks so accurate. It looks, and it's worded in such a way that really makes you feel like, you know, this was the first, what do you call like Blair Witch when they found footage? You know, was like a found footage movie before found footage, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. These are dossiers that have been unsealed and we're able to share them now, you know, kind of thing. It was really cool. I thought you were going to say I like the opening, meaning the town. I like the whole town sequence. It kind of got creepy in places, you know, with the way they did the montage and just showing them looking in windows and you're just seeing bodies in various different ways. And my key immediately to that was the stand. It just reminded me of the stand.
It's very standish.
Yeah, of... The virus has happened. It's everybody's dead. Now how do we survive? Kind of thing.
It's a biological thing, and in the stand it was too. It was a germ. I mean, it was a, what do you want to call it?
Was Captain Trips, wasn't it? What was it?
It was. I'm trying to think of the word. If it's a biological pathogen, I mean, it was definitely a mutation of the common cold, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. What do you call that? Why am I drawing a blank here? It's not like a bioweapon kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of, it's a good bridge because I thought that was one thing that I kept thinking, watching it again this week, I thought if this was remade now and they actually, this was basically true in the stupid ass miniseries recreation they did, remake they did, but they just barely tap on the fact because the Mad Hatter character, I forgot his name,
Dutton's
whole thing was he's paranoid and feels like the military did this on purpose, that they sent Scoop, which is the name of the project, they sent it out to find something biological that then they could turn into a weapon. And he's convinced of that. But they just kind of tap on it. They don't dwell on it. They don't say. As a matter of fact, the only time they ever have a big fight about it is he and Stone and Levitt. And Stone basically says, stop it. We can't talk about that now. We've got to go with what we have, right? The information we have in front of us. And I think if that was remade now, they would play that much more of, you know, one of them is a double agent for the military who has, you know, secretly... His job is like an alien. He's supposed to capture the virus and take it back to the bio lab, you know, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Paul Reiser.
He's the Paul Reiser character. Yeah. What were some of the outstanding things you liked about the movie? Like you remember, if we want to talk about those memory keys or whatever, what are those things that stand out to you other than the dead town, which I know you remember? Like I said, the wrist, when he cut the wrist open, that I always remember that.
Yeah, a lot of the visuals in Wildfire, the station or whatever underground, are very colorful and like Kubrick-esque.
Very good. That was going to be one of my keys.
2001.
Good. Yep. Definitely Kubrick.
So the those visuals, the monkey dying is traumatic.
Yes.
And so, you know, and they really did choke that monkey out. I mean, you know,
they didn't choke
humanely. No, they didn't kill it.
They just gave it some carbon dioxide. That's all. Just a little bit of carbon.
Don't you know
dioxide.
They want to shock the monkey, Dennis? I mean, David. I called you Dennis. It's so much so that you can actually see the shadow of the guy going in to rescue the monkey before they make the cut. Did you notice that?
And I did read that the ASPCA did approve that, and it was fine, and no animals were hurt, harmed in the making of this movie, blah, blah, blah. But
it's sad.
I think PETA would have a field day today if somebody tried to release this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because there's multiple rat deaths, you know?
Right. and who knows if they're real or not.
And just the fact that they're using them for testing. You know, but back then it made perfect sense, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you
mentioned the pilot that crashed. I love when he's flying and you just see those granules coming out of his mask.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's bleeding out from the mouth or whatever. That's just wild shit, man. I was like, holy cow. But it does come out of the blue. It's like all of a sudden, wait, where'd this pilot come from?
Right. Yeah. And there's no explanation for it. It's not a spoon-fed thing about... It doesn't even say, you know, flyover of so-and-so mission two or whatever. It just... It happens, and then later on we go, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then I already mentioned the end when he's trying to deactivate the bomb, and he's in that silo, and that laser shooting at him. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, and hits him right in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it would have been a little bit more accurate, though. I think he would have been toast.
Well, it would have gone through him to the back of his skull, probably.
Yeah.
But remember, earlier on, there's just one brief line, because I remember thinking that, like, the fifth or sixth time I watched this, I thought, that laser would shoot right through him, or whatever, or through his hand, even. But it says it's calibrated for smaller animals, but it still could be deadly. Is one of the lines in it. So it's calibrated for, you know, to kill a rat or a monkey, not to...
Yeah, he says don't let it hit you in the spine. So I thought he was going to be going in a tunnel on his stomach. I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, like you need to keep low, not vertical.
Well, and so you had those incredible graphics of the little square with the arms and the legs moving up the ladder. But it does.
It was like Pong.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, like, definitely early. The one that I remember too is epilepsy. I did not know red flashing lights affected epileptics until I saw this movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if it has to be red. It's got something to do with flashing, though.
Yeah, it's flashing the light. Numbers per second or whatever. Mm-hmm. I guess them.
That's why a lot of epileptic people can't play video games, I believe, because of.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it seemed like I remember that somewhere, seeing a warning on like video games or something.
And that's probably why they put a warning when they use like strobe lights and
exactly
things
exactly.
or whatever concerts or whatever. I love all the variety of poses of the death. I thought that was great.
I was going to say, what do you think of the cast? Because it's relatively unknown people.
Yeah, I love the cast. I thought especially Arthur Hill, I've always liked anyway and everything he's done, but I really liked him in this. I thought David Wayne did great as Dutton. Again, I agree with you on Kate Reed. Olsen could have really overplayed that character, but I thought he did it really well. I've got a Tim casting note. Where is it? I've got one
that's totally ludicrous. It's about a guy named Grimes.
Is he the key? Is he the technician in microchemistry?
I can't remember. He's a lower character. But guess what his name is?
I don't know.
Richard O'Brien.
Really?
I was like, it's Riff Raff from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
That's a good quasi key, I guess, or
Well,
side
it's
key.
not really him, but he has the same name. I just thought
Right,
that
right. But I
was
like the reference. I was gonna
Yeah.
say, I don't know if we're talking about the same guy. I think we're talking about somebody else. But anyway, there's a technician in the microchemistry lab that's working with Dutton and everything, or working with Dr. Leavitt. He is the Klingon from Trouble with Tribbles that gets in a fight with Scotty. That's
Oh,
the
okay.
act, the same actor plays him, and I have forgotten that totally. And I was watching him, went, "Oh, all to be hauled away as garbage." That's a Star Trek character. What is it? What? And I looked him up. So yeah, he
We
was in
can't
Star Trek
escape.
before he did Andromeda Strain. I love the cast all the way through. I think they're well done. I like all the corporate bureaucrat guys. I think they're well done and well played. The military guys are well played. So I have no qualms at all about any of the acting, or dialogue or any of that.
Yeah, and I have no real notes or alternate choices because I guess Weiss went with who he wanted and there weren't, that many choices. I love David Wayne. I was actually going through his resume to see what else I've seen him in because I seem to remember him from like Hammer films or maybe horror anthologies. It seems like he's just done a lot. And then, of course, I remembered, oh, he's the Mad Hatter on Batman.
Yeah, and I think he did several night galleries and
He did a lot of television. You could tell that was his bread and butter. I mean, he was on every show that came on in the 70s, pretty
Yeah, he
much.
did westerns, and he was a doctor, I think, on Marcus Welby or something like that. I remember him doing a bunch of television cameos. I liked overall, I love the process of this movie. Again, to me, very scientific. The movie goes step by step by step all the way through, even from how they pick up the guys in their individual labs to how they decontaminate for each level, explaining all their pro they explain process all the way through this, and I just love that. I love the whole way they deconstructed everything down to what it was for. I've
Nerd
got,
alert. Whoop, whoop.
yeah, that'd be me. I've got everything's in the computer. Something that you didn't hear in 1971.
I did
but
like when he went in and had that conversation with that African American nurse and about the baby, and she was like, yeah, talking about how the computer did it.
yeah, and the med
Yeah.
tech can do all this stuff, and you can touch it with your
Right.
screen, the screen pen. And this was 1971. I mean, computers were the size of, offices. They were huge at this time.
Well, it was almost like she was telling him his job would be obsolete soon. Hey,
Yeah,
doc,
it
this
had
is
that
the
science,
doctor.
had that science fiction element of, you'll make mistakes, but the computer won't. And the fact that this huge $9 million computer did make a mistake and the bell didn't ring, kind of thing. I thought that was cool too.
I can't remember what that nurse's name was.
I do not remember either, actually.
Kelly. Paula Kelly.
Okay.
So I guess she was Nurse Kelly, maybe.
No, that was the actress. I
Oh,
don't.
I'm
I think
sorry. You're right.
that
You're
wasn't
right.
a
I'm looking at
character
the.
name.
Her
I
name
don't
was
think.
Anson, Karen Anson. So she'd
Karen,
be
that was
Nurse
it.
Anson.
Yeah. I did find one continuity thing that bugged me was because they're so exact in this about stuff, but they
Oh my God, I've got a key. I'll tell you in a minute.
cool. She comes on and says, "Dr. Stone, I mean Dr. Hall, can I please feed the baby?" And he says, "No. Don't do it. Keep it in acidosis. I want it to breathe and scream. It's the only thing keeping it alive." Right? And then he goes back to Stone. He's talking to him because this is when Dutton is in the is hyperventilating, is exposed to Andromeda. And he's trying to prove to them that this is the revelation when he realizes it only exists in a very narrow band, and he's trying to convince them. But he's explaining it to stone in the room. And he's saying, because of this, and it goes into all the science of he's in acidosis and da 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 with the baby. And in the background, you see the old guy sitting on the table, and behind him is the nurse feeding the baby. Mm-hmm. I was going, wait, didn't he just tell you not to feed the baby?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a continuity error.
That's when the old guy leans up into the camera and goes, hell of a way to run a hospital. But that was one of the few continuity or logic issues I had with this movie. And for me, that's mm-hmm. that's saying a lot, you know. You had a key. What was it?
I was just looking up that Paula Kelly, who played Nurse Anson, and she was in Soylent Green with Charlton Heston.
Excellent.
That's a great sci-fi
That's a great key. Was she the furniture?
Yeah, casting key.
Was she furniture, girl that he made?
It's been so long since I've seen that movie, I really don't know. But she's not high up on the cast list, so she wouldn't have been a major character.
Mm-hmm.
She's like six or eight down.
I've got... I love the sets, of course. I love the whole production design. I like the fact that, like you said, everything is projected into the future, but looks very realistic. Looks like it could, you know, be a plausible future, as opposed to a, you know, jump ahead to Blade Runner or something like that. Does that make sense?
I do. It does. It's grounded in reality.
Yes,
I guess
that's
the phrase
best way
I would use.
Yeah. Of course, we talked about Robert Wise, who, you know, directed Star Trek: The Motion Picture and Day the Earth Stood Still before this. So this is in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Crichton. He's a definite key just because of so much. Westworld, Jurassic Park, so many of the other ones. Trumbull, Whitlock. I do have a trivia thing that I found out that this was the only Crichton movie where he makes a cameo. He is actually in this movie.
Yeah, I read that too.
Yeah,
he's like someone in the background. I can't remember.
I love the whole intrigue stuff at the beginning with all he tells Stone at the party is there's a fire, sir. And he immediately goes, I have to go. And the wife is like, what? And then when she tries to call her father about it, suddenly her call is cut off and you hear this line is being monitored. Thank you, Mrs. Stone.
That was great. Yeah. I love that. That was like one of my favorite things. I was like, wow, man, that just shows you how fast things can happen.
Uh-huh.
If the government wants to shut you down. I was like, wow. Yeah.
And there's a lot
of that.
Nobody. There's a lot of that in those early 70s movies of the government paranoia kind of stuff, mm-hmm. because it left over from the Cold War. And then it kind of went away, but then it came back, you know, naturally after Watergate and everything else.
Well, and I think on an enjoyment level for me, I didn't like that woman, so I was kind of glad they shut her down. She was like, but my party, you can't take my husband away. I'm having a party.
Yeah.
Wait here. I'll wait here. Sorry.
One of my first notes is, how many parties did they have in the late 60s and early 70s? It's like Exorcist too. It's like everybody's having a party at their house.
I don't know. And her outfit was just a few years prior to Ellen Burstyn's party and The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Really? I was like, is that the same hairstyle? I've got a little note. You mentioned that it was Universal. And I read that the sets and props were reused for such television shows as Universal's $6 Million Man, The Bionic Woman, Airwolf, mm-hmm. and Knight Rider. All these semi-science fiction shows from the 70s and 80s.
Oh, yeah. They repurposed them. What did you think of the very, very end, the little tag at the end of... It could happen again, sir, and so that's why we have to be prepared. And then it shows it growing.
Well, I mean, it's commonplace. I mean, movies use those tags all the time now. It's like a teaser for the sequel or whatever.
Right. But it didn't feel set up to me. It didn't feel like, Jason jumping out on the canoe or something. It felt really like a cool progression. And then the sound got really loud. And then suddenly, and I noticed there's no music for the credits. I had not realized that until this past week when I watched it again. I thought that was
So
really dynamic.
instead of a Jason Friday the 13th teaser or Michael Myers, it's more like Watch the Skies from the original
Yes,
thing.
very what good key. Yes. It's that kind of feel to it, and I also, again, going back to my why I support this as the best science fiction movie ever made, is that it's science wins. Science is right in this.
It's the way it should be in most things.
Yes. Well,
Although
yeah,
it's not very common these days.
Yeah, no. These days, people tend to say, "No, it's not science. Science is wrong. Look at, oh, the Earth is flat. I'm telling you."
And the ice ain't melting. It's just warm out there.
It's just warm out there. Ain't no such thing. But there we go. Let's don't get political. You know me. but overall, I mean, I think. I didn't pull a lot of key references coming back out of this, other than the typical, fairly obvious ones of like Contagion, The Stand, anything about a global epidemic that could have been rather than was, even down to what's the one when we first started the podcast? We were both watching the series. You watched the whole thing and didn't like it. I watched the first two episodes. Vampires in a military base.
Oh, the strain. No, was
This
it?
no.
No. It was shit.
It was the other one.
It's called
It
The
was shit.
Passage.
Yeah, and it was shit. But
It
anyway,
was shit.
but
The book's
that kind
good
of
though.
thing. But a lot of I don't think a lot of people have attempted this style. I think people. I was going to say a lot of the keys I had was the late 70s and early 80s Bond movies, because I think they took a lot of like the opening credit sequence from this, the way they do some of those montage progressions of decontamination and stuff. But not a lot of movies have tried to imitate or steal from Andromeda Strain. So I think that's why I don't have a lot of keys from it.
I only have one that I can think of.
Okay.
do you and this is gonna I've mentioned this briefly in an old podcast episode, and it was an aside. But there was a movie, I think it was a TV movie in the 70s called Where Have All the People Gone with Peter Graves. Do you remember that?
Vaguely, yeah.
It's like all of a sudden these people wake up and there's no one around. And when they go to find people, instead of finding them a body there, there's just their clothes and like some sand. Like they've all turned to dust. And it's got something to do with the sun or something. I can't remember. It's crazy, I'm sure. But it's these like four or five people, including Peter Graves, going around trying to figure out why everybody disappeared.
Interesting.
Where are all the people gone? Where have all
Well,
the people gone?
I did have a key that the whole beginning, very, very beginning. So it's these two military guys who are sent in to get the capsule, and they report back to base. Well, when they report back to base, it's all heard just on audio on the base's speakers, and it's very heightened. It gets really creepy. It gets kind of very intriguing, and it reminded me of War of the Worlds, the radio broadcast, not the novel, but it reminded me of listening to this reporter go, "Oh my God, you see that over there? Bob, look at this." And then suddenly they start dying, and it's very War of the Worlds to me. So that was a key.
Yeah, I can't think of any others. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot out there, and mine are going to be more post-apocalyptic related because of my horror background. But as far as science fiction, I mean, and that may be, that may be a testament to its power, is that it is unique and original.
Yes, definitely. And that's why I
So.
think it is so definitive, because like I said, I think the underneath it, the story is propelled by science all the way through,
It
which
is.
makes it to me science fiction. Oh, I just came across a note about your casting thing, because you had, we had, they sex changed or gender changed Levitt.
Right.
Weiss was resistant because he thought the studio would cast somebody like Raquel Welch.
Exactly.
And he didn't want that. He didn't want it to be a decorative assignment. He wanted it to actually be a real character. So,
And
and
they cast Reed,
once
and
he
I
could have
believe
Kate
she's
Reed.
French. I was wondering if she was doing an American accent, because if she is, she does a good one.
And I wanted to end it with a quote that I actually found online, which is a in 2003, a publication by the Infectious Disease Society of America noted that Andromeda strain is the, quote, most significant, scientifically accurate, and prototypic of all films of the killer virus genre. It accurately details the appearance of a deadly agent, its impact, and the efforts at containing it, and finally, the workup on its identification and clarification on why certain persons are immune to it. End quote. I thought that was really, again, I was going, see, supports my whole science fiction thing I've been saying for years. I'm just saying. So there you go.
Yeah, it takes me back a little bit to Michael Crichton as a writer. I mean, he was a medical doctor, so a lot of his books were rooted in science, and this one was obviously no exception, and probably one of his best because it's so grounded in reality. Jurassic Park, although it's a little far-fetched, the science in it seems plausible, that you could take DNA that was preserved and genetically clone a dinosaur. That to me is a great concept. Some of his other books, he just gets way out to lunch with his technology. And that's a shame, because I think that was one of his strong suits to begin with.
But I think his best novels, other than Jurassic Park, which is still a little bit medical, but his best novels and movies are all medically related, in my opinion. Like, I like
What's another
Coma
one?
a lot too. I liked Coma. I thought it
Well,
was
and
really
that was not a
good.
novel by him. That was by Robin Cook.
Oh, that's right. He directed it? No, he wrote the
He may
screenplay?
have done the
No.
screenplay. I can look it up. I can't remember. But yeah, that's not him. That would have been a good one for him to do, though. That
Well,
movie
he.
terrified my sister, and she was a nurse.
Oh my gosh, I thought it was so scary. Yeah. Book was great. I thought he wrote that book. I may have been wrong. I'm sorry. But you did remind me of a key. Sphere, his later novel and movie, is a lot like this. Scientists trying to, find out about an extraterrestrial threat.
At the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, that one's at the bottom of the ocean. That theirs was at the bottom of a military installation, sort of thing.
He did write the screenplay for Coma.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And I'm pretty sure he wrote the screenplay for Westworld, but I mean, he didn't have a book called Westworld that I recall.
No, there was, well, he wrote the novelization of Westworld. I
I
thought.
think he wrote Maybe. He wrote the screenplay for sure, because his first book was Andromeda Strain. I don't think he had anything prior to that.
But he wrote the movie Westworld. He wrote the screenplay for Westworld.
Right. Exactly. And he wrote the movie screenplay for Coma, but he did not write a book of either one, I don't think. Robin Cook wrote Coma, and I don't think Westworld's based on a book. He may have just wrote the screenplay.
And I remember Looker. I thought Looker was eh. It was okay. It was kind of
Looker? I
weird.
don't
I
even
didn't.
remember that. What is that?
It was in the 80s sometime. It was the one about the models who are digitally cloned kind of thing. Who was in that? Let me look that up real quick and see. Susan Day, Albert Finney, James Coburn.
I just don't remember. It's not a book of his. I mean, he dabbled a lot in television. He also did ER for you folks out there. He created
Yep.
that show.
Created ER. But he also did a lot of writing just for film, and that's what Looker was. Looker,
Okay.
Westworld, and what was that terrible Gene Simmons? No, it wasn't Gene, was it? Yeah, Gene Simmons was the bad guy or something. Oh shoot, what was that one called?
Oh, yeah. That we watched that with Tom Selleck. That's that. Oh, that was a horrible
Yep.
movie.
Oh, it was terrible. With the little baby robots crawling
Gene
around.
Simmons
Yeah.
cannot act, and it's like he's
Yeah,
up
that was.
against Tom Selleck, who's not the greatest, but pretty anyway.
But yeah, and definitely better than Simmons. Yeah, and
We went, me and you saw that at the movie theater, and we were laughing our ass off. I cannot remember
yeah.
what the name of that movie is.
Runaway, Runaway. That was it.
Okay. He
Yeah.
did that?
Yep. That was Michael Crichton, wrote and directed.
Oh my God. Oh, and I see Looker now. I'm looking through his resume on
So
Wikipedia.
yeah, so that
And I'm thinking
sucks.
Rising
Yeah, you
Sun
should
was not
check
that
that.
great. Timeline was terrible.
Timeline was terrible. Yep.
And I don't know. Anyway, he was hit and miss, and I think it's because he got away from what you like so much about in Andromeda Strain, and that is grounding it in reality.
Yeah, well, I think what happened was with film, it's kind of like a hybrid of what we said at the beginning. With film, he was pushed more into it has to be faster, it has to have more action, we have to have a chase scene, you have to have a girl with big boobs, whatever, as opposed to just writing his story better. And he started going for cliches and, letting and casting Gene Simmons and stuff like that. As opposed
Oh, I've got
to
to read you
telling.
something.
Okay, go.
Well, you know how I have a pet peeve. I mean, you know I read a lot more, and I know these authors like Robert Ludlum, and
Yeah.
that die, but all of a sudden, or V.C. Andrews, they still have books coming out, and it's like, wait, what the fuck? These people are dead. How are you making money off of them? And I knew that Michael Crichton was one of those as well because he's had books come out since he died too. So here's a little paragraph on his posthumous works. I can't say that word.
Okay.
Pirate Latitudes was found as a manuscript on one of his computers after his death and was published in November of 2009. Additionally, Crichton had completed his outline for and was roughly a third of the way through a novel titled Micro, which was completed by Richard Preston, who wrote The Hot Zone for you folks that don't know that, and was published in November of 2011. On July 28th, Crichton's website and HarperCollins announced the publication of Dragon Teeth, which was released in 2017. In February ni 2019, Crichton's website and HarperCollins announced the publication of Andromeda Strain Evolution, the sequel to Andromeda Strain, a
What?
collaboration. Yeah, a collaboration with Crichton Son LLC and author Daniel H. Wilson, and it will be released
Oh my
in
God.
November of
I'm sure.
2019. So it will have already been released by the time this airs, David Horton.
Yep.
But you know what that is? That's got to have to do with the family that inherits the rights to these, selling the rights to other people. And that is some bullshit. I mean, I understand they want to make money, but there's other ways. Put new editions out there or something. I don't know. But I don't know.
Well, and I guess I don't have a problem with you taking, oh, let me rephrase.
Property?
You can take inspiration from somebody else's IP and do an original and great, but trying to ride on the coattails of something else, I have a big issue with.
And that's exactly what it is. It's not got anything to do with being inspired by a story. It's got something to do with cashing in on someone's name. Yeah. I mean, we all know art inspires art. I mean, obviously, that's what this podcast is about, basically. But the fact that, Robert Ludlum wrote three Bourne novels, and yet Jason Bourne is still a character in novels today, is just not kosher to me. I have a
As
few
always.
award nominations if you want to hear those. The movie was nominated for two Oscars, including art direction and editing. It was nominated for a Golden Globe for score, and it was nominated for a Hugo for best dramatic presentation, but it didn't win any. So I wonder what beat it. I don't know.
It deserved more than that. I mean, it was I again, I love this movie. It's a brilliant science fiction piece.
Yeah.
And yes, those of you listeners out there, tell us where we're right, where we're wrong. If you are if you like modern storytelling, you might not like this movie because it does have a particular pace to it.
Or you're a germaphobe?
Or you're a germaphobe, you might not like it either. Yeah, that's true.
Nope. Or a monkey fan?
Yes, if you're a card-carrying PETA member or PETA member, you may not like this movie. Because
I
talk
like my
about,
Reese's.
yeah, if you like your Reese's in pieces, you might, yeah, no.
That's lame. That is so
That
lame.
was such a bad joke. Yeah, sorry about that. All right, so Tim, I will see you next week where we jump back in front of these microphones and tell more stories. How about that?
Yeah, we'll do. I'm thinking probably something scary again.
Let's
So,
do scary next week.
that's too scary.
Thank you all for listening. And again, we so appreciate you guys. We cannot say it enough. Sounds formulaic, but it is definitely not. It is true from us. Thank you for listening to us. Thank you for liking, commenting, subscribing, saying all kinds of
Reviewing,
reviewing,
reviewing.
all that stuff. Please, the more you stay in contact with us, the more we feel like, hey, we're doing something worthwhile or whatever. And the more we
Yeah,
can,
absolutely.
get in touch with you guys. So we'd love to see and
Yeah.
talk and hear from you. Thank you all. And Tim, my friend, I will see you next week.
That sounds like a plan.
Alrighty.
All right, bye.
Bye.